Hello and welcome back to AstroCapture, your podcast about astrophotography. I'm your host, Stéphane. And today, in this episode, we're going to talk about the essential equipment for beginners. What's your basic kit? So, thanks for joining again. I hope you liked the first episode. Obviously, please subscribe. That would be quite helpful for the podcast. So, last episode, we talked about why doing astrophotography and the type of targets and skills, etc. you need. Now today we're going to talk about gear, because we love gear in astrophotography. Without the gear, there's not that much you can do. But it doesn't mean you need all the latest, super expensive gear, full frame camera, harmonic mounts, 130mm counterplate telescope. You can do a lot with not much. And as alongside your skills, you can upgrade your equipment. So let's talk about what is the basic kit you need. And the key point for me is for you to understand that you can create fantastic images much more easily than you think. So that's very important. Again, it's a journey of exploration and progress. And each session you will perform will help you to acquire experience and improve your results. So let's get into section one, which is what is your basic kit. Sorry. So there are a few things that will make your basic kit. First is a camera. We'll talk about the type of cameras you could use, lenses and optics. So photo lenses, telescope, etc. The mount, which is probably as critical as the other parts, and the accessories, and to finish, the software. All right, so we're going to deep dive into all of these parts of your basic kit, and we'll start with the camera. So regarding the camera, it's on the critical path. In order to do astrophotography, you need something to capture images. So you need a camera. Mostly, you're looking at two types of cameras. You're looking at DSLRs or mirrorless cameras, which are, you know, cameras you can buy to do photography during the daytime, at night, etc. There's quite a lot of brands doing these cameras. And you have dedicated astronomical cameras, which are really dedicated to do astrophotography. You can't use them to shoot during the day, for sure. Trust me, I've tried, it doesn't work. And these are mostly the two types you're looking to use. For DSLR and the mirrorless camera, they are very versatile. As I mentioned, you can have a lens attached to it. You can use it during your holidays, during weekend, at a company's party, whatever. They're very versatile and they can be used in different ways. And you can control, because it's very important in astrophotography, is to be able to control the camera you're shooting with. And these DSLR or mirrorless, you can control them via a built-in intervalometer, an external wired cable release, or even a computer. For example, when I started astrophotography, I had a Sony A7 III, and I had the SDR connected to it, and I can use it to control the camera. But when I do traveling and I don't have my gear with it, I will use intervalometer, which is pretty helpful in order to manage the sequence of shots I would like to take. So talking about intervalometer, it's a programmable remote control that allows you to program your exposure settings, the duration, the repetition, the numbers of sequence. It's very flexible and really helps you to take many shots without any manual intervention. So you launch a sequence and, you know, it do its thing until it's finished. So very handy. DSLR usually are about 8 bits or more, 10 bits, maybe sometimes 12 bits. The bits capacity of the camera is very important in terms of the gradations of images you will do in terms of the capture of the light. Basically, it's level of gray, and, you know, more bits you have, more level of grays you have, so you have a finer gradient for sure, and you got finer colors and details. Maybe I'm saying something wrong, but pretty much that's what I understand. Obviously, the SLR cannot be cooled, although there are some mechanisms you could use potentially to do that, especially in summer. When I was shooting with my Sony A7, temperature was going high very quickly. I think in top of my head, I was shooting around as the sensor was about 30, 35 degrees. It's very hot in south of France, so obviously it's not great for noise. But it works. It works. And, you know, the key thing, or the most important thing, the key takeaway, is there are very few bad modern digital camera. So use what you have. If you have a DSLR or mirrorless camera, that's all you got at the moment, use it. It's good enough. It will work. No problem. Now, if you want to use a dedicated astrochemical cameras, then for deep sky astrophotography, that's clearly something that will make a big difference. And it's related to a couple of features related to the cameras themselves. The first key feature is you can cool the sensor. Cooling the sensor helps to reduce the thermal noise, which is essential for long exposure. And this will be very handy in terms of capturing as much detail as you can. Usually this camera will connect via USB, so you can plug and play them into any controlling computer, either a laptop or an AZR or Tuktek Stella Vita, using Nina, etc., etc. They come in monochrome or color, and that's obviously a big difference compared to DSLR mirrorless camera. The monochrome part or color stands for OSC, which is the one-shot color. So monochrome cameras are often more sensitive, which is usually pretty good for a guide camera. And they, most of them, all of them have a very good quantum efficiency. They have a very good noise control. It's usually what we call a unity gain you need to reach. But basically, dedicated astronomical cameras, for sure, the cooling is a key feature. It helps you to control the thermal noise of the cameras. They're easy to connect via USB, and you have two sort of them, monochrome, one-shot color camera. I use a one-shot color camera right now, and it works great. It's fantastic. I have the ZW-AZ533 MC Pro Color. It's a fantastic camera. I can't complain. I love it. But of very good cameras with very good sensors, like the 585 or the 571, which I think is on the 2600 ZWO. So obviously, step up in the game. You have DSLR, mirrorless camera, use it. You have dedicated astronomical camera, even better, right? That's covering the part for the cameras. And now the next part, we're going to talk about lenses and optics. So now we've talked about cameras, which was the first part of your basic kit. Now we're going to talk about lenses and optics. So you have the camera, you need optics to collect the light. So there are different optics we're looking to do astrophotography. First one is the photo lenses. So usually these will be used for wide field imaging. So fast lenses with a low F number, i.e. F2.8 or F1.8, are crucial to gather as much light as possible. A simple 18 to 55 mil lens can be sufficient for photographing the galaxy or the Milky Way. So that's your photo lenses. Then the other optics you can use, obviously, which are extremely common, is telescope. So depending what you want to shoot for, you're going to be looking at a different type of telescope and obviously different field of view, which will be a combination of your camera sensor size and the focal and aperture diameter of your telescope. So when we talk about telescope, we have mainly two main type of telescope. You have what we call the refractors, which are telescopes with lenses, and reflectors, which are telescopes with mirrors. So refractors they are very practical, they're quite robust, and they're quite easy to do, especially when you think about collimation. Usually the optical alignment between the lenses is quite stable and doesn't change easily. I mean, you have to, you know, drop it from high, or, you know, give it a beating, I guess, in order to have a problem of the alignment. And clearly, if that happens, I think it's very difficult to do it by yourself. You'll need help from a professional. Then we have reflectors, so telescope with mirrors. Obviously, you have the Newtonians, which are very popular, very famous optical formula, which you can see on a lot of telescope and still used a lot to these days. Or you got Schmidt-Cassegrain, which are mostly been made very popular by Celestron with the Schmidt-Cassegrain C8, and you have the line from C9.25. The C11, C14, and you got now the HAD version as well, which are fantastic telescope. And for these ones, collimation could be challenging. Newtonian collimation for this could be a challenge, like the Newtonians. You need to have a laser or some special optical devices in order to align it. It's not really difficult once you get the hang of it. It's a bit more tricky for Schmidt-Cassegrain because basically you're going to have to fiddle with the secondary mirror in order to do your alignment. And you can see, and obviously you see a huge difference with the alignment on these two type of telescope. And lastly, probably the most important, is the field of view. So when you're choosing optics, you need to have a consideration about what you're going to want to image. If you want to go from wide landscape to deep sky imaging, there's probably no telescope that can do that, or no optics that can do that. You're going to have to make choices. So we're talking earlier about photo lenses, so these ones would be very very helpful for wide field imaging, from, you know, galaxy to shooting large nebulas like the California Nebula, etc. So there's quite a few ones you can shoot. But if you want to, you know, to go to probably medium to small nebulas, galaxies, etc., clusters, globular open clusters, etc., you're probably going to need a bit more focal in order to reach this target. So something around 5.6, 7. Please check. You can use online calculators like Astronomy Tool, which is really good, and you can use to visualize the field of view you will get from the combination of your camera and your telescope. And finally, keep in mind also that you can have, or you're going to have the need, or you could use some correctors and focal reducers. So these accessories are often used to ensure, a flat image, a flat field of view across, obviously, all the field of view, or to reduce the focal of your telescope to make it faster. So, for example, on my telescope, I got a flattener, which doesn't change the focal of my telescope, but flatten the image. And that means I've got, you know, pretty good stars within the corners, really, really sharp. It's amazing. And I've got also the reducer, which is a flattener at the same time, and will reduce my focal to 5.6 from f7. So that means it open up my field of view. It's increasing my field of view, not by a huge amount, but it does, and it makes also my telescope faster, i.e. I will capture light much faster. So now we talk about cameras, we talk about lenses, optics. In the third part, we're going to talk about the mount. What about the mount? The mount is going to be an essential part of your kit as much as the camera and the lens. some say it's most important and the most costly element of your deep sky imaging system, because without a good mount, even the best camera and telescope won't be able to produce good images of the stars, because there will appear streaks, or you will not be able to do long exposure. So usually you have different type of mounts, but mostly what we're going to focus on is equatorial mounts. So they're definitely essential for the deep sky astrophotography. So unlike other mounts, they allow the telescope to track the celestial objects by rotating on the single axis, which is compensating for the Earth's rotation. You have manual or motorized also. So for astrophotography, you definitely need to be able to track the object you're shooting with motors. So motorized mounts, especially with the GoTo functionality, are strongly recommended. It would be, I guess, some guys do lucky imaging with a Dobson telescope, and I've seen pretty good results. So I think it's definitely an option, but it would probably still be limited in terms of shots you will be able to perform. And tracking, long time tracking, makes a huge difference. I mean, if you're looking at to do, let's say 20 hours, 30 hours on the same target, you're looking at multiple nights, you really want to be consistent in your framing, in your tracking, because it will allow you to take longer exposure. It's not always recommended, depending of your light pollution and other criteria, but you're looking at 180 seconds, 240 seconds, 500 seconds. So definitely, if you're shooting within this exposure length, you definitely need a mount, motorized mount, that help you and support you for the guiding. Another key point is the payload capacity. So that's also a very important factor, because it will indicate the maximum weight the mount can support. Usually a common rule is to limit the weight of your equipment to about 70% of the mount's specified maximum capacity for astrophotography. So let's say, for example, you will go for an EQ6R, which is what I've got. So it's rated, I think, for 20 kilogram. So you're looking at 70% of that, so it's 14 kilogram. So that'd be the max limit. I'm pretty sure you can go above, but I really think it depends on the mount. There are variation from mount to mount. Some mounts are tracking well, some mounts are not tracking so well. Some mounts can be optimized. I did on mine, I used professional services. So yeah, definitely something you need to consider in terms of the gear, the total light, the full weight of the gear you will put on the mount. So the telescope, the camera, focal reducer, focus motor, a guider, a guiding telescope, etc., etc. All of his gear weights, and that weight needed to be taken into account. This is the payload capacity of the mount you will have. So talking about mounts, you got easy level, entry level mounts like the SkyWatcher EQ3 Pro and the EQ5 Pro, which are a really good option for a medium diameter telescope. For example, the EQ5 Pro has a load capacity of about 9 kilograms. So remember the 70%. For AVS setups, you might consider models like the EQ6R, which I have, which is a fantastic mount, or newer Harmonix drive mounts like the ZW AM3 or AM5, and have a lot of equivalent done by SkyWatcher, Ioptron, etc. These are very these are light mounts, but they can support significant load. I mean, the AM5, if I'm not mistaken, has the same payload capacity as the EQ6R. So for, I don't know, a third of the weight of the mount, it's pretty good. And there are other benefits from harmonic mounts, but that may be another subject. One of the key consideration regarding the mount is the tracking issues. So obviously there are mechanical devices, and there are mechanical imperfection of the mount that can lead to tracking errors. So definitely this will create problem for long exposure. So that's where you need guiding, right? Another common problem is backlash, where the gears don't engage immediately when you're changing direction. So you have different settings, tuning you can do on this. And obviously software and can help a lot. So like software like PHT2, which is a tracking software, which is working in conjunction with Nina, for example. And that's really very, very good software. I highly recommend it. Now we've covered cameras, we covered optic lenses, we covered the mount, and we'll talk now about essential accessories and connectivity. Beyond the main equipment we've covered, some accessories and good organization will make your session much more enjoyable. I guess alongside the mount is the tripod. So a stable tripod is fundamental. It ensures your camera is as stable as possible and avoid any motion blurs, tracking problem, etc., etc. Leveling is important. Also, make sure your tripod is stable and leveled. Obviously, once you've done the polar alignment, it's no longer a problem because polar alignment will compensate for any leveling issues with your tripod. But nevertheless, stable tripod is fundamental. You can see on the new ZWO harmonic drive mounts, they have like carbon tripod. I think it's great for, you know, light setup, but for heavy setups, I wouldn't trust that. I'd probably go for something more solid, like a wooden tripod, which are very stable and they are very good at absorbing shocks, or something a bit more usual, like an EQ6 or tripod. I think that would do the trick. Another thing is the power supply. You need power to power. You need power. There's no way around it. You need power for your camera. You need power for your mount. You need power for the guiding, for everything. So a stable power source is required. So if you have a mobile setup, so you can use some laser batteries, lithium batteries, which are pretty good, and they're becoming more and more common and cheaper. At home, you can use main power with, you know, extension cords, etc., etc. I kind of use both, to be honest. When I can, I prefer to use main power because I can last longer. The battery I have for when I'm remote or somewhere else will last 3 to 4 hours, which is, I think it's 200 watt battery. Especially in summer, the power consumption is very high as I'm shooting at minus 10. But, you know, if you're mobile, invested a good battery with enough capacity for you to last, you know, the intended period of shooting. So let's say you're shooting for the night, you're going to be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours. You need to power throughout that time. Maybe you can have several batteries, but it's not great because basically you're going to have to interrupt your shoot, shut down your system, restart it. Not amazing. So probably a good battery with enough power would be enough. And you can probably calculate the power consumption of your setup so you can work out what's the capacity you need. Also, very important, although it's a minor point, it's cable management. All the cables must be secure. You need to make sure they're not going to snag, they're not going to create tension that's going to affect your tracking or even damage your equipment. So you've got tie wraps, USB hubs, whatever. Can greatly improve the reliability and the simplicity of your setup. So you can even plan cable runs on paper first to avoid problems. I've used different Velcro tape and different things like that in order to control my cable management. It's not amazing, but it works. It's fast. It's attached to my telescope and my equipment, so I don't have to go and grab some stuff all the time. It's very easy for me to use, and it does the trick. Definitely not the best cable management, but it does the trick. Another one is filters, and we'll have a dedicated episode about filters, but they can be extremely useful, usually in, I would say, three scenarios. First one is to filter UVER light for, you know, broadband targets like galaxies, clusters. It's very helpful. Then you can use light pollution filters, and you have different brands, different sorts, but mostly they're very helpful for nebulas. And then you have narrowband filters that would be for, obviously, mostly I'm thinking about one single shot cameras, color cameras. You have also filters for monochrome cameras, but you're looking at LRGB, so luminance, red, green, blue, so you can rebuild the light spectra. And you have also dedicated narrowband filter, so most popular one is SHO, so sulfur, hydrogen, and oxygen. But filter is very helpful, and you will benefit from it, especially in terms of reducing your exposures or improving the quality of your exposure if you're going for the same amount of time, regardless of using a filter or not, which I tend to do now. I used to use my filters to reduce my exposure time, and depending on the target, you know, from a few minutes to a few hours. But I realized that more data I have, the better it is. And if I can use a filter in addition to that to increase the signal I will have for my exposure, I think it's the best situation. And maybe you heard my cat in the background. He's very keen to appear on the podcast. So that was this one time where you appear, hopefully. And last but not least, the last accessory I want to talk about is the focusing systems. So achieving perfect focus is crucial for sharp images. There's no way around it. If your focus is wrong, then, you know, all your exposure are rubbish. You have different ways you can do that. The most common one, or the most easy to use, is the Batinoff mask. So you use it to set your focus at the beginning, and you'll have to do it multiple times through your exposure, because your focus will change down to temperature, down to the orientation of the telescope. You've done the meridian flip, you know, different factors. So you'll need to check that if you're using a Batinoff mask. For more advanced setups, you can have motorized focuser or an autofocus software, which are very effective and help you to handle all the situation in terms of temperature changes, in terms of meridian flip, change of orientation of the telescope, and the imaging trains. I use one, and I use one since a few months now, and it's fantastic. It's great. It's amazing. I could do without it, but I've got it. It's much more convenient. Before that, I was using a Batinoff mask, which was great as well. I had to just remind myself to check the focus on a regular basis. And definitely a motorized focuser is very convenient, right? It makes you kind of lazy in a way, but the good lazy, right? Which is basically focus on what you're capturing and do not worry too much about your focus on your telescope. So now the last component of your basic kit is software. That's going to be the brain of your setup, but not only. Modern astrophotography relies heavily on computers and software. We'll just mention them here, but we'll probably dedicate an entire episode to them because they're essential in modern astrophotography. So you could use software and computers for different purposes. First one is to control your camera and your mount, and you have different software like Astrophotography Tool, Nina, Sequence Generator Pro, SER, which I'm using at the moment, for auto-guiding your mount. PHT2 is the most popular and the most advanced anyway. You can use software to plan your session. So you got planetarium software like Sky Safari, Carte du Ciel, Astro Planner, Deep Sky Planner. For myself, I use Sky Tools Imaging, which is amazing software, really taking into account a lot of parameters, light pollution, where you are, your setup, quantum efficiency of your cameras, etc. And that really gives you an amazing detailed plan, what you can capture, what should be the lengths and numbers of exposure. But any tool, any planning software will help to decide what you're going to shoot, how long, where it's going to be located, especially if you got, you know, some houses or trees around yourself, etc., etc. Then processing your images. So here we have a few choices. Obviously, Cyril, which is probably the best free software for astrophotography processing. And you have also PixInsight, which I use heavily. And you have other tools like Deep Sky Stacker, Nebulosity, and obviously Photoshop, because you can do everything with Photoshop, even astrophotography. And you will need sometimes some ASCOM drivers, which are also key for the different hardware and the software pieces to communicate between themselves. And that will be mostly useful if you're using Nina, if you're using TubeTech, or if you're using ZW-AZI Air solution, then you don't need any of this because it's pretty much plug and play solution. And we are reaching the end of this episode. So in conclusion, start simple, evolve at your own pace. So the world of astrophotography equipment can seem, you know, quite complex, especially as majority of the market is filled with new entry-level products every year. So you can feel that you have too many choices, too complicated to choose, right? But keep in mind that it's best to start with basic equipment so you can decide if it's really for you or not. So you can go for a Newtonian telescope. You can use the DSLR you're using during your holidays. You can get a mount secondhand. You can, you know, set up whatever makes sense to you based on the information I can provide, or other more experienced astrophotographer can tell you. The key thing is, again, try, keep it simple, and take it from the start. And as you evolve, then you can start to add equipment, you can start to add things into your way, your setup, the way you're capturing the data, the images, etc., etc. There's no bad modern digital camera, so whatever you have is probably good enough to start. And you know, the most important part of the entire system is you. So you'll learn, you'll get experience, you'll get practice. And if you remember the first episode, perseverance is key. And from there, you will evolve and go through your astrophotography journey. So thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope it was not too boring. Next time, we will look at how to plan your astrophotography session to maximize your chances of success. And I will do probably a few special episodes. The first one is how to use AI with astrophotography. Definitely you can use it through different step of your process of the flow. I will also probably do a special episode on the new telescope Vera Rubin, which I think is going to be a big game changer in our understanding of the universe. And I'm very keen to present it to you and explain how that's going to work and what amazing things have been done to put in place this this new telescope. And I will be also working on the new episodes. So thank you very much again. Please subscribe. If you like the podcast, please say it in the reviews. I will appreciate that as well. And again, thank you for joining us. And I wish you all clear skies. And see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.